CliffCentral.com.
All righty.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I was talking to some kids yesterday. I'm sounding like such an old man when I say that. Some kids. I was talking to some kids yesterday. I was talking to a bunch of students who they are studying television production and directing. And they wanted to have a discussion with me, like a Q&A, which went on for like an hour and a half about my experiences of TV and radio and all that stuff. And it felt almost like a history lesson because those things have all changed so much. It's incredible. I mean, we're obviously still involved in the modern reincarnations of those things. You know, we do podcasts and I'm doing a live TV, well, not a live TV show, but a recorded TV show at the moment. And I've done TV the old way and I've done radio the old way. And it just felt like, oh no, here's this old dinosaur to tell us about how it all works. See, I can't hear you for some reason. Have you unmute your microphone? The most used words of 2020. Good morning, Sia.
Sorry, I pulled a Leanne.
Good morning, Sia. Good morning, Mbulelo. Because people were starting to think you were perfect, Sia, until you did this morning.
Damn it. Look at me just crushing my track record.
Yeah. I felt like such an old asshole, though, talking to these kids. They're like, don't you love television? Isn't it the best thing ever? Wasn't it so cool to be in a show like Idols? And I was like, no.
Uh-oh.
You know, because you don't ask me that stuff now, especially if you are, and I'm not in the business of shattering dreams, obviously. You know, I'm not the anti-Oprah Winfrey. But the reality is, hey, Mbulelo, unmute your microphone. You also don't know how this thing works.
Sorry, is that the term?
Anti-Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, anti-Oprah Winfrey. Like the Antichrist. I
love it.
Yeah. So anyway, these kids were asking me about TV and about radio and how it all works and what the best experiences have been and what I enjoyed and blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of, because you know, when you're in it and when this is your life, you don't think about that as a career. You don't think of it as a trajectory of stuff that has happened. But I don't know. I'm pleased that we've evolved. I would feel terrible if I was still a radio DJ who had a job on a radio station, and if I was still doing the 29,000th season of Idols, because it would have meant that I hadn't moved at all. You know, I hadn't done anything. And when I talk to these young people who are interested in doing media stuff, some of them are really smart people, and they've got really interesting ideas about where it might go next, and talking about animation. And, you know, I thought a lot about Bulelo's sports show, which is kind of a new incarnation of what we do. And that's exciting to me. But what doesn't excite me at all is this, this boring idea of just staying where you are and keeping things as they are. So maybe, despite my political leanings, which are conservative, maybe I'm an extreme radical when it comes to everything else. I read the most brilliant quote from Camille Paglia. Listen to this quickly, because, you know, we're all talking politics at the moment, and this is such an interesting thought to put in your head. Camille Paglia, obviously a famous philosopher and writer. She's an author of a number of really groundbreaking books about psychology and philosophy. She says, those people who invest all of their spiritual energy in politics will reap the whirlwind. The evidence is all around us. The paroxysms of inchoate infantile rage suffered by those who have turned fallible politicians into saviors and devils, godlike avatars of good versus evil. I think politics for many people has taken the place of religion. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before. I don't want to get too heavy too early in the morning, but I know this is the kind of stuff that Bulelo loves to talk about. So while he's on the show, it's a good thing to have him on. And this is the kind of stuff that Sia raises his eyebrows to, like we're talking shit. And, you know, he chooses a word like inchoate. And he'll say, I knew it because you would take that word and you will find five reasons to use it this next week. And people go like, oh my God, Sia uses such complicated language.
I'm still stuck there.
What she's talking about and what I love about what she's saying is that politics has become a kind of religion for people who don't have a religion anymore. You can see this in, you know, movements like Black Lives Matter, or movements like whatever there is left of white supremacy. These sorts of things happen when you take away people's belief systems. You take away the scaffolding that civilization gives them. And then they just become devotees to a new kind of religion. And that religion might be anti-racism, which sounds like a good thing on paper, right? I mean, who wants to be a racist? So anti-racism, that sounds pretty good. That sounds like it's the opposite of racism. Awesome.
When or where do you think the tipping point was where this changed, when this change happened?
Well, you could argue that it was when Nietzsche said God is dead. You could say
or
that was
Hegel.
Or Hegel, yeah, but let's say it's because Nietzsche's long enough ago that no one who was alive at the time he was alive is still alive, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say it started when Nietzsche said God is dead. What I'm trying to explain here, and what I think Camille Paglia is hinting at, is that when people all over the world started to, and not all people, because we still have, most people in the world are still religious. And that's the counterbalance to this kind of thing. When they started to abandon those things that were the scaffolding of civilization, you know, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, whatever the various belief systems were that people had before, even animism, the idea of the fact that we're one with nature, whatever the belief system is, you take your belief systems, you think about how when you're a kid, you start challenging these things, and you look at how, I don't need God anymore, I don't believe in this stuff. I mean, I definitely was a militant anti-theist for much of my 20s and maybe even into mm-hmm. my mid-30s. And you know that because it was so unpleasant for some people who are religious who like to listen to me that they probably don't listen to me anymore. I who knows how many people I tuned out and lost because I was talking like that. But the reality is if you throw out that belief system, and this is not necessarily true for me because I haven't grabbed onto a new kind of belief system. Not to my knowledge. You know, I don't devote myself and pray to a political god or to a religious god. But for many people, that gap that is left is immediately filled by something else. You know how an addict who's got, let's say, a drug problem, and they fill that drug problem with a different kind of problem. Maybe it's
right.
It's
we all have a vice. Sure. Everything we use something.
But this is not necessarily a vice. This is a space that might have been occupied by a virtue. Like, let's say you're a good Catholic, right? You wake up every morning and you say your prayer and you go through your day trying to do good because you believe that God rewards you for good works. Or let's say you do it in a more extreme way. Let's say you become a nun or a monk and you devote your entire life to God. And then at some point you have a crisis of conscience and you decide, I'm not doing this anymore. And so you replace that devotion and dedication, which is not a vice. It's a virtue because you're doing good for humanity. If you're a nun and you're not a wicked nun and you're a nun who goes around spreading good and, you know, you try to live by the laws of the Bible and you try to do, as many things in your life to heal the sick and to look after the poor and those kinds of things. So you're living a virtuous life, but something happens and you decide, I don't want to do that anymore. Then you replace that virtue, just like someone who would have a vice, yeah, would replace it with either another virtue or another vice. And I feel like there are lots and lots of young people who've grown up because the great philosophers of our age have been people like Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, and these are the people whose work has punched through society, and many people have read their works, and they're very smart people. Daniel Dennett's another one, and there are probably others too. And now, a lot of those people have found themselves intellectually satisfied, but spiritually empty. And they've replaced that stuff with politics. And that's what Camille Paglia is talking about in that quote. And if you've replaced religion, which has very, it has use, it has utility in people's lives, right? Religion gives people hope where there isn't any. It makes them feel part of a community. It gives them meaning and purpose. It fulfills a lot of those check boxes that most people have open. Like, what is the purpose of life? You know, these are big questions. We all have these questions. Even the dumbest, most irritating person in your life sometimes wakes up, probably more than sometimes, and goes, why am I here? What am I doing here? What's the reason I'm here? What is my purpose? And if you don't have religion, you've got to answer those questions in other ways. And I'm telling you, the other ways are hard. So, you know, for a Thursday morning, this is probably way too much to get into, and maybe you're rubbing your eyes.
You had some great sleep last night.
I did. So, yeah, maybe you're waking up this morning, you're rubbing your eyes, you're thinking, oh, I've got to go and get my shit together and work and make some money. And this is the last thing you want, is for me to pile on with, ooh, you better have a scaffolding, but you better. And because if you don't have that scaffolding, I'm telling you now, your life's going to be really, really hard. A lot harder than you think. So what is the scaffolding? If you're not going to have religion, what are you going to have in its place? Because you've got to have something.
So this is such a great question, and it's why I'm so fortunate that just my genuine interest, I wasn't forced in this direction. My interest in chemistry, and if you speak to most people that have done science, is that the interesting thing about chemistry is it really is, of all of them, the essence of where does life begin?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's great philosophical questions even within the base of life. For me, it lies there, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand we do live in a world I believe the term is the God of gaps, you know? The things we can't explain yet, fill God in there. I feel alone. All right. Well, that's clearly in it. So for me, I mean, science or chemistry in particular, but for me, we know so little as people already. I'm so inquisitive about the world I can see and touch. The meaning of life is, you know, all around me. It's just that we know so little that that question.
Yeah. So to you, the miraculousness of existence is maybe enough to start filling those gaps, or at least it's a start.
I mean, just to ask, where does life begin for me is an extremely, it's such a deep question already in such a tacit sense. I don't need to wonder about man in the sky. That just trying to grab that question for me gives life so much meaning, you know? And really the beauty of chemistry is it stretches right across from we can touch it to even the imperceivable is, well, you know, the human soul and consciousness.
Yeah,
and
I mean, what you're talking about is the same reason when people ask me, why do I have a laboratory, which is so ridiculous. It's almost like, you know, crazy scientist stuff. And I'm not a crazy scientist. I have a laboratory because I'm playing with God's cookbook. I'm learning how to understand the universe. I don't care about cooking. You know that, right? We talked about this just yesterday. I'm terrible at that. And cooking doesn't interest me because it's just what humans consume. And ultimately, all cooking results in a turd. But with the periodic table and with chemical elements and with chemical compounds and their reactions, then you're playing with God's cookbook. And that doesn't result in a turd. That results in many different things that are all interesting. And that's just fascinating. So I hear you. There's a basis for this in science, but then you have to do some real work. You know, religion's a little easier in some ways. I mean, you have to have faith and belief, which are massive undertakings. So I'm not going to in any way diminish the experience of religious people, many of whom are people who I love, you know, my own family and friends. And religion is central to their existence. And what I've learned to appreciate in the last 5 to 7 years is that those people have got lots from that. They've obtained much from that experience and that understanding that I don't have. However, if you don't have religion, what are you going to put in its place? And I fear when I look around me in the world today that there are a lot of young people, talking about anyone between the age of 16 and the age of 40, because that's still considered reasonably young by modern standards. You know, 50 would be the halfway mark if we're going to live to 100. And if you're mm-hmm. under the age of 40 and you do not have a religious system that you can use as scaffolding for your life, then what can you use? And there are a couple options, right? There's science, but that's very touch and go, because it may not answer some of those questions, because there's the ephemeral and there's the numinous and there's the stuff that's very difficult to nail down in a formula or a sample size or an equation or a calculation. And that stuff is going to continue to gnaw at you. So if you only have science, it may not fill all the gaps, the God of the gaps.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
But there could be philosophy. There could be history. There could be psychology. There could be biology. And a lot of those can start to fill in some of the gaps that pure empirical science cannot.
The best way I've heard why philosophy should be our central tenet is that, you know, often the religious is, my God, phenomena. Everything's phenomenal. The point, the actual essence of philosophy is to reduce what they call a phenomena to the noumena, which is what they call it. So you want to bring what seems the go ahead.
No. Well, just explain it.
No. Go ahead. I mean,
so phenomena are those things.
Yeah, what is noumena?
Okay, so phenomena. Like that. Phenomena are those things that we can observe that are goings on around us, either that are experiences or that are measured effects, you know, the result of scientific and universal forces. And then noumena are the things which are much more difficult to explain. Those are things which we sometimes feel, or that we, like when you look at a beautiful painting or you hear a beautiful song and you just start to cry, that's hard to understand. That can't be reduced to a formula. Not now anyway. So
is it noumenal?
Yes, noumenous.
Numinous. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a cloud. The best way to someone explained numinous to me in this way, so I'm going to use the same definition for anyone else who wants to know, but when you look at a cloud from the earth, you see it as this big white puffy thing. When you're in a cloud, it's mist. And if you could feel a cloud, it would feel just wet. And none of those things are the same viewed from earth or from outer space or from inside the cloud. So it's difficult to kind of, you know, that it's just water molecules that are kind of coalescing in the sky. But that's such a boring way of looking at a cloud, because we can lie on our backs on a summer's day, look at the cloud, and we can see castles and we can see faces and we can see all kinds of things, right? Dragons. That's numinous, as opposed to what it really is, which is just water. That's such a boring explanation. So anyway, there's some serious things to think about this morning, which comes from that Camille Paglia quote, and maybe it's something to consider in your own life this morning. And I do like this show to be, and I hope you do too, I like it to be at least a little provocative sometimes and thoughtful, and not always just stupid or shocking or interesting or opinionated, because we talk a lot about politics on this show, and we talk a lot about... And we will today during the Burning Platform. I think you're gonna love this guest. We've got Nick Hudson, who's from Panda. They are the Pandemic Data Analysis organization, and they've gone completely against the government's narrative that the lockdown was necessary to preserve our health. And these people have done the hard work. They've done the heavy lifting in terms of statistical data that is available. And they've compiled basically incontrovertible evidence to show, and this is what we've been arguing on this show for the longest time, that these lockdowns were stupid. Nick has that information, and he will explain it to us. And then you know it's not just an opinion, because God knows we have enough opinions, right? So I watched the Trump debate, the Trump-Biden debate. What a mess.
You watch the full thing.
Yeah, an unmitigated shit show is the only way to describe it. There were a couple of highlights. I think both of these men are – it was like watching – what can I say? It was like watching a a remake, a 2020 remake of Grumpy Old Men with Walter Matthau and who's the other dude? Jack Lemmon, I think. That was it. It felt like that. It felt like a remake of Grumpy Old Men. There's no other way to put it. It was okay. I mean, in some places I managed to push through, but I don't think a lot of people would have watched the whole thing. We started off because, you see, we want entertainment. And if you want entertainment, I suppose there might have been things in there that did it for you. But if you were looking for what I asked for yesterday, that someone could change your mind on something, not that you would suddenly vote Biden if you'd been voting Trump, or if you'd like Joe Biden, that suddenly you'd like Donald Trump, but that maybe they would have convinced you of their position on one or two things. But it just turned into an ad hominem shit show where they were flinging insults at each other. And they were both completely, I mean, Donald Trump was busy interrupting Joe Biden at one point, and he said, "Can you just shut up, man? That's so unpresidential." And I thought, you just told him to shut up and you're telling him he's unpresidential. They're both unpresidential. They were both just.
And then he also used the term clown.
Yeah, he called
him
a clown twice. They both were so bad. It was childish. So if you haven't watched it, don't bother. I hope they have a second one, and I hope it's a little bit better, because, you know, many people are just saying, is this the best the United States can do? Including Professor Jonathan Janssen, who he went online and he said, so much for the, you know, the country on the shining city on the shining hill, or whatever it is that the term that they use, shining city on the hill, mm-hmm. is what they call Washington. And Professor Jonathan Janssen, who I've always had a lot of respect for, he and I have disagreed a number of times on things. And I think he just climbed on the America, you know, America is bad bandwagon. And if America is bad, then the rest of us are completely shit. Because what people do is they take the worst of America and they compare it to the best of, say, Norway. And then they say, well, look at what a shit show America is. But I think this presidential debate is one of those situations where you get the leaders you deserve. I mean, can you imagine what a debate between Cyril Ramaphosa and John Steenhuisen would be like? It would be exactly as bad, maybe even worse.
Ooh.
Because they don't
get him up with the EFF.
Because they don't necessarily have the best personalities either. I mean, if it was Julius, Cyril, and John Steenhuisen, we would be so embarrassed. So, you know, first remove the splinter in your eye before finding the lintel in someone else's. I always find that very entertaining, that people like piling on the United States, because, you know, it's like, you know, if the kid in class who's getting 98% for all of his tests suddenly gets an 80, and everyone's like, ooh, you got an 80, but they're all getting 60. It's just so
exactly
so ridiculous. Anyway, we're trying out some.
I'm not too surprised by it all. I'm just a little what's the word? I'm not dismayed, because that just sounds like my expectations were high.
You're maybe a bit and you're a bit apathetic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there. It's just like, now at how low.
Here's the important thing. Anybody
undignified as well.
Undignified is a good word. But anyone who was going to vote Trump before this debate will still be voting Trump. Anyone who was going to vote Biden before this debate is still voting Biden. And undecided voters will probably, it maybe even keeps them away from the polls more. They're like, if this is what I've got to choose between, then I'm not playing. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was the only interesting observation. And I'll say this.
I did, though. Okay, my last point is I did love the Trump's version of PDA, which is, I'm sure I'm like one of four people in the world who noticed this. So Jill Biden comes onto stage after the debate and gives her this big old hug, and you can tell, like, okay, you know what? They're a couple. Yeah. Melania comes on. I think they just hold hands, and she just like awkwardly strokes
his arm,
Trump's arm. It was just like the stroke. You guys have not looked into each other's eyes and felt a soft little beat of your hearts in years. I really don't think you like each other.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk to Nick Hudson later on. That'll help you figure out what's really going on in South Africa and what's been happening. Because now we have enough evidence to be able to put together a case for whether or not our government made the right decisions, and whether or not the the medical danger was as great as people say it was. And compare this to other similar situations around the world. And I really am pleased about this because I'm sick of having conversations with people who come armed only with opinion or with some insight they think they have that no one else can have. And be very wary of anybody who ever says to you, oh, I have information that you don't, and that's why I know better than you. When you say, well, what is your information? They go, I can't tell you. You can, and you more can usually so, you just know dismiss what, those people out of hand.
You know, Timothy Maurice was the one who taught us and speaks on the endowment effect.
Yeah.
You know, you brought that up a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. I think what now happens is by reading an article in the New York Times or, you know, just watching one documentary on the Clinton administration.
Right.
I now instantly feel like, of course, I know what I'm talking about. And so I will now base my whole entire opinion on the US politics based on that. So I now puff my chest out a bit more saying, actually, you know what, based on what the New York Times said and this and this and this. No, you aren't an expert based on one thing.
Right.
And you don't know everything as well based on one thing. I think we'd all be better off in these times if we just own the fact that we don't know everything and we're a little more open-minded.
Yeah, but you no one knows enough to be able to say they know everything. So, you know, go into it with a little humility. That's one of the things the science people have got on their side, if you go back to the conversation we started the show with this morning. But the other thing I wanted to throw in just before we get to the headlines is we're trying out a new piece of software to broadcast the show. And next week, Monday, we'll try this for the first time. I'm going to maybe allow you to watch the show live if you're at home or if you're on your phone and you want to kind of watch us. You obviously can't do this if you're driving or whatever. You can do what you want, but I don't think it's safe. So no, we're going to try a new sort of platform that we're doing the show on where you can actually watch whoever's on the show live. So you can see us talking rather than, and you could do this almost like a YouTube live or a Facebook live, but better. And you could participate. You can ask questions. We can do polls. We can put up video. We can do all kinds of cool things, almost like a long distance live webinar type situation, but it's obviously the show the way that it's always been. So if you want to try that out, we'll set it up next week and maybe you want to watch it live. Could be fun for those people who've always wanted to see the show live. Cause we often get emails from people who say, you know, it would be such a bonus if we could actually see you idiots instead of just hearing you the whole time. That means you have to get dressed.
So conscious of,
I know,
where the light catches my double chin.
Sia's going to be hiring his own makeup artist from now on. Watch.
We have 2 days of practice. Come Monday, I'll have a technical write up before we start the show.
Imagine we're all dressing up again. Oh my god! Because yes. I think a lot of people during this lockdown have just given up on making any effort with the way they look. Anyway, let's get on with it. We've got things to do, people to see, places to go this morning. CliffCentral.com and good morning. If you've just woken up, it's 25 to 7. All right, so let's do some headlines. There's a lot going on at the moment. The ANC is expected to pay back 105,000 Rand for the trip to Zimbabwe on the Air Force jet, remember? That was the one with... Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula. It was revealed after President Cyril Ramaphosa directed the report submitted by Defense and Military Veterans. Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula made her trip public, and now she's going to have to pay for this along with the ANC itself. That's 100,000 with some change following their controversial trip on a South African Air Force jet. The minister went there with Tony Yengeni and Ace Magashule and Lindiwe Zulu. I mean, what a delegation. I mean, if those people arrived at my house, I would go to the gun safe. That's the only, there is no reason that those, if those people particularly, you know, if the ANC had sent some other people, I would go, well, maybe there's something to be done here. But if those people arrived at your house, admit, you would know straight away they were there to steal something.
Who's expecting the ANC to pay this money back out of interest? Because
you don't think they will.
People like, come on, man. That's not what I think. come on. We've got 20 years of evidence now. Who are these people that are, it's the hope that kills us, Gareth.
Okay. Bulelo already throwing caution in there. Yeah. All right. So maybe they won't. Who knows? There was a runaway truck accident. These things scare the hell out of me. I was in my car once when I was a student at university, and for some unbelievable reason, I switched lanes. And then I promise you, this is not a word of a lie. A minute later, because we were waiting at a red light, a truck came barreling out of control in the lane that I was in and just plowed two cars into a ditch. I would have been in there. It was like the scariest moment I can recall, because you don't necessarily do anything right or wrong in that situation. You can't, you know, you see a truck coming up behind you, and they're obviously going to brake, right? Maybe their brakes have failed and they just plow you out of the way. I don't know if those people survived, how badly they were hurt, what could have happened to them. But there was just in a situation where a truck's out of control. That is terrifying. And in Durban, a number of residents are relieved after a runaway truck plowed through the wall of their house. Another truck driver died in the accident while trying to stop the out-of-control vehicle. The truck collided with at least four cars, including a police vehicle, before crashing into a fence and damaging two houses. No other injuries were reported. Police say the cause of the accident is under investigation. Oof.
So this isn't the first time an accident like this has happened in that area. It happened in Pinetown. It was a couple of years ago while I was still in school. Mm-hmm. And Pinetown, I think, is situated in like an ideal transport spot. You know, when trucks are either leaving Durban or trucks are just about to come into Durban and they're looking for a rest spot or fill up place or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the previous accident, I think it was a truck as well who went through a red light and just tons of people were hurt or killed in the process. But with this particular one, on one side, okay, we now have video so we can see what has happened. But also, shouldn't there be a line somewhere? This video that I saw, and I stopped watching because it's just a lot to handle, was of this woman who was just screaming. And you know, there's this like scream from a gut that's just
that's
too real and too raw. And she was screaming for her mother. It's like, then stop recording.
Oh, that's terrible. I hate these videos where you see these horrific accidents. And now because we've got cell phones everywhere and people have got dash cams and you see these things. Like I saw a video the other day of this bunch of cars all, I think it was probably in America somewhere, but they're all on a highway and they're backed up. It's traffic. It's bumper to bumper. And then a truck comes down the emergency lane and this guy swerves in just in time, like by a ball hair in time for the truck to go past. Otherwise he would have been taken out as well. Man,
human beings have had some bad ideas, huh? Trucks are one of them. I've never understood the value of them. Is they damage the roads?
Yeah.
Like get them off the road and fix the train.
I agree with you.
Like there is nothing. And listen, truck people, we're gonna get messages about because no one gets more defensive about how else would you do it than the truck industry. And I have somebody who works in that finance space. They are wealthy, and they're brutal. They're keeping themselves in place, but. That it's a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. And you know, if you've ever been on the road in a little car, when you're next to one of those trucks, you are nervous. Don't pretend you're not. Even if it happens to you every day and you get used to it and you know how, you know, the whole highway system works, for example. And every time I see one of those trucks really close to me, I get nervous. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Another screwed up thing that I observed with this accident in particular through the video, it looked like there was something wrong with the truck that the driver couldn't control or handle. Because in the video, you see the driver jump out of the truck as it's driving more and more into cars.
Yeah, it's probably
a car.
Probably failed brakes. Anyway, it's that's really scary, and I agree with Mbulelo. Yeah. We shouldn't have as many trucks on the roads. You don't have to tell me. I not only was driving through Pinetown, where I suppose this accident happened on Sunday, because the highway was jam-packed, and it was an alternative route that Waze gave me, but I also was on the highway with millions of trucks. I mean, there were just, I say millions, thousands of trucks on the road between Durban and Johannesburg over the weekend, and that's because we don't have... We don't have good rail. And what rail we have has been either not maintained or sabotaged.
You know, I was in Gothenburg last year, and I driving in that city center, it's like, why is this so pleasurable? Oh, there's no trucks.
Yeah.
Like the whole coming into the city, just everywhere, it's cool. Let's just go. It's such a pleasure. Yeah. It is such a pleasure.
All right. My mom and I have been on that stretch of highway in Marion Hill in front of a runaway truck, and her quick thinking saved us. Sure. That's from Candace. That's a scary thought. Cause you also, if you know, that area is quite hilly. So if you go off the highway, you go down a ravine. You're there's not a lot of options, basically. Okay. Let's move on. Other stories that are in the news. Sudan. Do you care about Sudan? Well, maybe you should. And it's a good thing that we've got Jean-Jacques Cornish back for the new feature, which he'll be giving to us every 2 weeks or so on Cliff Central, where we'll be talking about African affairs. And he mentioned Sudan on his first report last week with us. Jean-Jacques, of course, being the foremost African correspondent when it comes to issues on the continent that don't always get the attention they deserve. And you can catch that again in a few days' time on cliffcentral.com. And that's brought to you by the Joburg Business School. So if you haven't heard it yet, you're missing out. But Jean-Jacques Cornish will be back, no doubt, to tell us about this. But multiple civil wars have raged in Sudan, on and off, since independence in 1956, including the 1983 to 2005 war. That's a long time for a country to be at war. It led to the secession of the South and the devastating conflict in the western region of Darfur that began in 2003. But Sudan's army have just launched a disarmament campaign on this, this happened from Tuesday, to seize all illegal weapons in the country that's been left awash with guns after decades of war, and they blew up 300,000 firearms. So they put them all into a big pit, and they put mines on top of them, and they blew these guns to smithereens. So obviously,
the army. That's always worrying. Yeah, that's always worrying. We've seen this the story before. When the army takes the guns away, it's doesn't go well. I'm sorry. I hate to be the Grim Reaper.
So what do you think?
Sometimes I don't think you completely hate.
But they blew them up. What is your problem?
Yeah, because my mom worked in the space for a long time. Is that you should always, if the army have to do that, we actually have problems. But okay, they blew them up. Okay. But I worry for the citizens of Sudan.
Well, it's not as if they're armed.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
The army
can't stand up to tyranny.
That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, let's turn to art and France for a second. Listen to this. Five activists went on trial in Paris on Wednesday for trying to seize an African funeral staff from France's preeminent indigenous art museum as part of a campaign to pressure the government into reinstituting items that they claim were stolen. Emery Mwazulu Diabanza, who's a 41-year-old Congolese person, led the operation at the Ki Branly Museum last June, condemning the pillage of Africa. "We're taking it home," he said in a video he posted on social media after removing a 19th-century funeral staff from Chad and parading it around the building. Since then, he has staged similar operations at indigenous art museums in the southern French city of Marseille and in Bergendal in the Netherlands. Now, I don't know what your position is on this stuff, but, you know, so much has been lost. And I've told you before how angry I get when I see people destroying history and destroying human artifacts that are really for the benefit of all civilization. And I don't care, frankly, whether it's kept in the Louvre or whether it's kept in the Cairo Museum or whether it's kept in a Chinese vault, as long as it's kept. And as long as people can go and see it and we can all learn and appreciate our human heritage. But I'm very concerned when people buy these things into private collections because then we never see them again. And also, you know, we don't have the benefit of looking at them and viewing them and understanding and appreciating them all together. So I'm nervous about that, but I'm even more nervous about activists like this who make it political. And then, you know, let's say this 19th century funeral stuff gets taken back to the Congo. You know what's going to happen to it in the Congo, right? It's going to become something which will be sold for money, and then we'll never see it again. Or worse, it'll be destroyed because one group, and we know the Congo is in perpetual war, and one group in the east of the Congo will fight the other group in the west of the Congo, and this thing will be blown up in some kind of firefight. And then it's lost forever. So better that the French keep it, frankly, at this point, until the Congo is stable. Don't you think?
Well, you know what's about to eliminate this conversation? My little nephew is the biggest nerd on the planet, in the world, mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. And 2 weekends ago, I went to his house and he let me, I think it's Prince of Persia. Is that a game?
I think it's Prince of Persia.
Anyway, he loves this game. He let me put the virtual goggles on. Mm-hmm. And Gareth, you would love this. And I don't know if you've been exposed to it, but you can actually go into the pyramids. Part of the game, they've built into the game a virtual 3D tour of some of the most famous pyramids. Oh my God, it felt like I could touch the walls. It's so well done. And if you touch something, it gives you information. So I think more and more we're going to move away from this sort of notion of iconoclastic art, and we'll move into a world where who needs the real thing? Because this was an unbelievable experience. Yeah, I mean,
I'll tell you who needs the real thing. The people who are programming that game are going to need the real thing.
I
don't want to see some artist's rendition.
That's sad if we aren't going to need the real thing.
Let's stop messing around. The real Ark of the Covenant, should it exist somewhere, would be the apogee of any archaeologist's career. In fact, of all archaeology, right? If you could find the actual thing that the Israelites carried around with the tablets of Moses in it, that God himself would come and speak to Moses from. If you could find that artifact, don't tell me that the Prince of Persia video game with 3D goggles on is going to give you the same experience, please.
This is where we probably differ as people, is I don't romanticize those things. Like, the knowledge about them is far more romantic to me than, I really don't care about Alexandra's statues.
Tutankhamun's funeral mask, we didn't even know it existed, so we couldn't have programmed it into a game unless some archaeologist had gone and found it.
Well, once we find it, all we need is one photo and we got it forever. Don't you worry. There's a guy at EA game.
Then, Mbulelo, I hope you also have fun marrying some VR virtual person.
He will. He'll be having sex with a 3D virtual reality doll at some point.
Don't describe my dream world, with Scarlett Johansson.
You see? I see.
And good luck to you. You're someone who's traveled the world and you know the value of travel. When you're sitting in your basement with your 3D goggles on and you think that's travel, good for you. I'm not going to be on that page.
I'm not there with you either. No. Sorry.
Disney are going to cut 28,000 jobs due to coronavirus. Sure. Disney announced on Tuesday they'll cut 28,000 jobs from the U.S. Parks and Experiences Division, pointing to depressed demand caused by coronavirus and uncertainty over when the country will open up fully. The cuts were needed in light of social distancing requirements exacerbated by tough restrictions imposed by not Florida, where Disney World is, but California, where Disneyland is. About two-thirds of the affected employees are part-time staff. So if you want to see, here's a perfect example. There's Disney World, there's Disneyland. Disney World is in a red state, Florida, run by Ron DeSantis, right? He's the governor. They haven't had a hard lockdown in Florida. They've actually had less deaths than California by a wide margin, despite not having a lockdown. The people at Disney World have their jobs. Disney World, with certain social distancing rules and so on, is open. You can go to Disney World. Disneyland is in California, which is run by the Democratic governor, a guy called Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom had a hard lockdown imposed on the people of California, to the degree that for a few weeks now, California has still not reopened. They've still not got any kind of entertainment venues running normally. And those are the people who are losing their jobs. So 28,000 people in California losing their jobs, zero people in Florida in the same business losing their jobs in exactly the same kind of theme park run by the same company. And don't pretend politics doesn't have an effect on your life. Those 28,000 people do not have work to go to today. So politicians will keep fucking up or doing the right thing depending on how you vote for them or don't.
And for those who care, the NBA bubble is down in Disneyland in Florida or Orlando.
But this is very interesting. So the viewership
higher than ever.
Higher than ever in the NBA?
Higher than ever.
Really?
NBA rating. Don't believe there's no history. It's higher than ever. People are hungry for sport. It's NBA, NFL doing better than ever.
Okay. I read something to the contrary, but I'll take your word.
Yeah, that's because I imagine the type of stuff you're reading is people are kneeling, so we won't watch. It's nonsense. The ratings are higher than ever.
Okay.
And in NBA, NFL doing
apart
new
from,
deals
apart
Fox,
from,
with
apart,
ESPN.
Apart from your opinion, can you perhaps give us some evidence of that? Would be nice.
Sure. I'd be happy to send articles. Yep. They're doing new deals as we speak. NFL, NBA, higher deals, new deals. Don't you worry. The numbers are better than ever.
All right. I can't,
in the middle of,
I can't, Mbulelo, with all the love in the world, I can't imagine that an empty basketball court with no spectators is going to get nearly the ratings of the kind of event where people are actually.
It's because you haven't watched it. They've turned it into an incredible viewing experience, by the way.
I haven't watched this, but I have been to.
Big credit.
I'll tell you something. I've been to the NBA All-Star game. I went in 2004 and I went in 2014. So there was a 10-year gap. And those shows are so interactive and they involve a crowd in such a big way that it was for me a totally different experience to anything I've ever experienced in South Africa where your audience just watch. You know,
the Americans do it differently.
So here's a story. This is from Google. So this is interesting. NBA conference finals take a plunge, including in the West. Listen to this. The biggest loser was the Western Conference Finals on TNT. Supposed to start an uptick, given that the series featured LeBron James. But one game dropped a staggering 41% in viewership.
Okay.
With a comparable matchup last season between the Golden State Warriors and Portland Trail Blazers. Meanwhile, Eastern Conference Finals between the Miami Heat and Boston Celtics on ESPN dropped 15% when compared to last season. So I don't know where you're getting your stuff, but that's where I'm getting mine. So that's an article that's from Google. Let me just find a different news source. TV ratings down significantly in the 2020 conference finals compared to previous years. And this is from an analyst at sportskeeda.com. All right. They seem
okay. What they're not taking into account is people are watching on OTT solutions more than ever now. I have a good friend who works at Fox.
What is that?
Over the top. So that means you're not. I'm not watching cable TV anymore. I'm watching it on my phone. They're watching.
But that's like me. Okay, but that's like me claiming that we have 200,000 listeners every morning instead of 20,000 because I reckon that people are passing on the link to each other and they're cutting out our podcast and they're putting it on WhatsApp. But I can't prove it.
Yeah, but what are you trying to get to? The BLM movement is cutting the ratings.
It's damaged the ratings, guaranteed.
They'll be fine.
They've politicized sport. Are you telling me that attracts people?
Stop saying politicized sports. Politics is everywhere all the time. It's always been in sport. Muhammad Ali, don't give me that. Politics is everywhere.
In the middle of what both of you are saying,
I'm not a sports viewer, so I can only rely on the evidence that I've just given you.
I get that their hearts were in the right place by doing this. I just saw LeBron James and some of his teammates a couple of days after Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. Did you guys see that? They went into the arena with those white doily looking things around their neck.
They actually did that? I thought that was a parody. I thought that was a made up art. You've got to be joking. What a bunch of fucking idiots. No, really. What a bunch of idiots.
Like little.
if you didn't think they were stupid before, this should be all the convincing you need.
You know who you're like.
Don't Gareth, sport you know like. Bands. Like, couldn't they just had like Ruth or
By the way, Bulelo, I'm looking at an article now which tells me that the NFL have actually admitted that the taking a knee thing has damaged their ratings.
No, listen, it's always
going to be. And their jersey sales.
Listen, we're always going to have this. Trust me. They're negotiating new deals. It's coming out now. They'll be fine. Don't worry about the NFL. Don't worry about the NBA. Whatever. And I know what you want to say is the politicization.
No, you say so.
That's so boring. Gareth, I'm so bored of this.
This is pure Mbulelo analytics without anything to back it up. Bullshit.
Okay,
I'm calling bullshit on you. I'm talking nonsense and that everyone can disregard what you've said about this so far because you've brought zero evidence. I brought you three articles.
I'm happy that Google means your evidence is true. Well,
this is on the fly, Mbulelo. I don't study this stuff like you do, so I would be surprised if you don't come back with something. I'm waiting to see what you've got.
No, I'm happy with what I know.
I'm not sure that Ruth Bader Ginsburg lace collar thing was real. Honestly, that looks like it's fake news. If that's true, then this thing is. Look, I'm not a sports viewer anyway, Mbulelo. I don't care about politics and sport, but I'll tell you this. The average guy in the United States, the one thing that they can talk to anyone in their business or their office or whatever it is about is sport. Most men talk about sport because they don't think it's going to lead to enormous conflict. They talk about sport because it's something that people can be passionate about without having to kill each other. The minute you politicize sport to the degree that it has been politicized over the last year, to the degree, as you rightly say, that everything's been politicized over the last year or more, it's been a while now.
It's forever. It's not just now. The politics has always been in sport.
I don't disagree with you. And there's a story that I was reading just the other day in ancient Jerusalem about the different chariot races. There was the blue team and the green team, and they were all political. So I agree with you. But the deal is that for the average person who does watch basketball or football or whatever it is, most of them are not looking for political stuff in that sport. They're watching it because it's competition between athletes. That should be the primary thing. The secondary thing may be political, but if you're watching it for politics, there's plenty of other stuff that is primarily political.
You know, you might like...
You don't agree?
No, completely not, but it's fine. We can move on. You know who you might like? There's a UFC guy who came out and is like a big Trump supporter, and he's got everyone's backs up. You know how I have to say leftists just crumble at any sort of pushback? And he came out like after his fight, and he's out there. He like super Trump. I forget what his name is, but he came out and and he has everyone's backs up. And I kind of like that. You need a bit of pushback because the left, you know, we're getting a bit soft. Well, this guy just comes out and he supports Trump. And it's
more,
good, man.
Here's more stuff. This is from Forbes magazine, and Forbes obviously a reputable news site and hardly right wing by any means. This is from Sean. Mm. Sean just sent me this. 38% of sports fans say the NBA is too political for that's the reason why they're watching less. So that's another article. Thank you very much. What is this big dick swinging between Mbulelo and Gareth? Get evidence, Mbulelo. That is from Vinny. Oh, he'll bring us evidence. We're just doing a live show. It's hard to find that stuff while you're on the go. It was a joke, the whole doily thing. Apparently that was from Daniel.
Damn it. Oh, that's disappointing.
NFL overall down 8% in terms of viewership. There's only one example. My sister works for Live Nation, and the entire Florida workforce has been furloughed. Eventing, concerts, etc. in Florida still not allowed. Yeah, but I'm comparing apples and apples. You've got Disney World, Disneyland. Okay, so I get you. But I'm not talking about the concert business. I don't have those statistics. I've just given you precise comparisons between the two states in terms of their lockdown strategies. With Disney World and Disneyland. That's an apple and an apple. Don't bring me a banana that's a live concert and say that I must compare an apple and banana. Okay.
Oh, you're saying bananas don't matter? Whoa,
Jesus, no.
Oh, okay. I'm not going down that road.
There's a lot of people who agree with you, Mbulelo, about virtual reality.
You know.
Carol says, I'm with Mbulelo. It allows everyone the ability to experience something, and that is the future.
That's okay. Once you remove your emotions, we'll all get to the truth. I expect to be right in the end.
Then Jessica is challenging me. She says, Gareth, re-artifacts being given back to the Congo. Aren't you practicing, and she calls it the high bigotry of low expectations or whatever the term is. No. I'll tell you why. Because the Congo is, on the basis of evidence, a shit show. The Congo is a constant warring clusterfuck. And you don't need me to tell you that. Just go to the Congo and see for yourself. Go, just Google the Congo if you want to use the low barrier to entry that Google presents. Do you really think something is safer in the Congo than it is in Paris? If you do, you need your head read.
See, my virtual reality just removes all the tension out of the room. Yeah. Don't worry.
All right. We've got the Burning Platform. I mean, we could carry on with this all morning. Burning Platform coming up next. That is with, you're going to love this if you like evidence. Nick Hudson. He's from Panda, which is pandemic data analysis. That's going to be really interesting. We're going to talk to him a little bit about, sorry, not data and analytics, pandemic data and analytics, not data analysis. And we'll look at what exactly the evidence is. Now we've got 6 months of statistical evidence to back up decisions and claims that the government have made, or to make people think that they were wrong. So here's an appropriate song, Panda, 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 Panda. Back with the Burning Platform. That's next.
CliffCentral.com.